Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, K-E-Y-S. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.
I got some advice from an individual that said, you're going to have a lot of different men and a lot of different people that come into your life. And you need to see past their weaknesses and see their greatnesses. Take their weaknesses as their faults of man, and take their greatness as their ability to change the world.
I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
As creators, we're always on the move. Whether it's a live podcast event, a pop-up shop, or a workshop, we're constantly interacting with community, and that's where Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe comes in. Imagine this: you're at a live event, a listener loves your merch, or a participant wants to sign up for your course on the spot. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, you can accept their payments right there and then, right from your iPhone, so there's no extra hardware or no delays. Total game changer. It's not just for creators. Any business owner can do this. It's about making transactions smoother and much more personal, growing your business in your way. We've been using Stripe for our products and courses for a long time, and now with Tap to Pay on iPhone, you can take your business to the next level too. So visit stripe.com/tapiphone to learn more. Remember, folks, with Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, your business is always at your fingertips. Wes, welcome to The Unmistakable Creative. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
I'm honored to be on the program, man.
Well, you know, I came across you by way of a link that my friend Chris Ducker had tweeted, and I went and followed your project, and I looked at it on Kickstarter, and I thought, yeah, this is a story that we have to tell. So rather than me giving it away, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your journey, your story, and your background, and how that has brought you to what you're up to in the world today?
Big question. Start off right with the big one. Mm-hmm. You know, my story is, it depends on which avenue that you come into my story, because I kind of have a two-headed monster. So let me give a little bit of background for the audience, then we'll go into this, you know, the Kickstarter page that you're talking about. You know, my early years were a journey, to say the least. At the age of one, I was abandoned by my biological father. At the age of 6 and a half, I was abandoned by my biological mother. In that time, in that short window of time between 1 and 6 and a half, I had a stepfather who was a very dark human being, and I was sexually abused, physically abused, tortured, all kinds of craziness, dark stuff. And that continued actually into, after being abandoned, you kind of go through a whole process of life where you don't have an identity, you don't have a family. There's a lot of different pieces that we take for granted that you quickly realize how important that they are. And there was a lot more abuse that continued through my childhood. In fact, probably up until about 17, 18 years old, I was dealing with different forms of abuse from different types of step parents or, you know, foster facilities or whatever else I was going into. And that led me to be, you know, to just have my own issues, my own insecurities, my own dark demons. And before the age of 16, I had tried to commit suicide 12 documented times. And I say documented because there were many more times that people didn't know about, rooms that I sat in, loneliness that I endured. But obviously, at 16 years old, some things changed for me. I had some life-altering, changing activities, one of which being that not caused by me, but caused by the medications and drugs that they had put me on, my liver failed. And I was dying, and I was sitting in a hospital, and I was being told by doctors that I had an 80% chance of death and a 20% chance of life. And the reason that I was in that predicament is because of the pills and everything that they had been giving me to deal with all of my turmoil and pain. And they'd given me a bunch of crazy labels, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder, bipolar, you know, ADD, HD. I mean, I had almost every label. I was on 25 different medications every single day. About half of those were medications to deal with the problems, and the other half were to deal with the side effects from the pills that were supposed to fix the problems. But they weren't, obviously. I was still very sad and emotional and kind of distressed. And so at 16 years old, I was laying there and I had this decision to make. Was I going to continue listening to these doctors, these you know, individuals who had it all right, who knew what they were doing, or was I going to basically give them the middle finger and say, you know, enough is enough. I'm not going to live like this anymore. And obviously I wouldn't be on this podcast if I hadn't chose the latter. I chose the latter, that I wasn't going to live like this anymore. And that day I stopped all 25 medications, went cold turkey, which if anyone is listening is in the medical industry, that's not a good thing. If you've ever seen any drug, you know, anyone coming off drug withdrawals, you kind of understand what I went through. But I was on 25 legal, illegal drugs, in the sense that most of the drugs that I were on were one or two chemical compounds away from being stuff that we try to keep off the street. So when I went through this withdrawal, it was a really interesting experience, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. You know, it was 3 days that I spent in the fetal position, but for me, it felt like hours or moments. But I literally didn't come out of the fetal position for 3 days. And that was a life-changing experience for me in every aspect. And in that moment, in that day, I made a decision to become a hero. to become a hero to myself. I didn't know that that would lead me on a journey of now really creating a mission to change the world in the sense of the 25 million youth that are in the United States, and there's a million more around the world who are suffering with some form of abuse or neglect. The individuals, every 13 minutes, a child is lost in this country to suicide. Every minute, a child attempts suicide. I had no idea that that decision I would make when I was 16 years old would forever change my life and send me on a course that would not only empower me, but give me the ability to help so many others. And that leads us to the Kickstarter page that you were talking about, is that we are, for the first time, we've been doing this now for a few years, but for the first time, we're publicly, you know, asking for support from the community, saying we want to take this to the next level and impact more lives. And so we're, you know, like anyone else, trying to raise some money on Kickstarter so we can have the resources to go to the next level. So that's kind of a quick, dirty version. There's a whole other side of my life that people thought they knew about me because of my childhood and all this distress and all these things that I was going under. I was trying to be as normal, using air quotes, as I possibly could be. And I found that I could be something and have an identity in entrepreneurialism. And so I dove in and started my first business when I was 8.5 years old, made $500 that day and never looked back. Really focused on entrepreneurialism, you know, was on the who's list, was self-sufficient by the time I was 16 as well. I mean, there was just a lot of different aspects of my life, but nobody really knew this torment that I was living in, this hell that I was living in. I was consulting Microsoft and Janneking and G&K and major, you know, major corporations, and then going home at night and thinking about ending it all. So it was this really weird thing that I lived in, this really weird place that I existed in. And it was my reality, and it was also my, you know, fiction as well. And so that all came to a screeching halt a few years ago when I decided to found A Human Project, which is, you know, our nonprofit, our for-purpose organization that is now in 7 different countries around the world. We're growing exponentially. You know, the right person sends the right tweet and things change. So it's been amazing. I mean, you and I are talking because of the right person sending the right tweet. So you just never know what's going to happen, but that's it. That's where we're at right now.
Cool. All right. So there is a ton of stuff here, and I want to dig back into all of it in a lot more depth. You know, I want to start with this notion of abandonment and a loss of identity that happens when you're so young. And I'm interested in how you start to find your identity after it's been lost. Because I think to some degree, we all lose a part of our identities as a byproduct of just growing up. And in a lot of ways, to me, the journey of any creative person or anybody who's done something of great significance is finding their identity again.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, you're exactly right. We all, I call it the core. You know, when I do my teaching and I work with individuals, I call it the core. We all have a core that we come here with, right? It is our identity. It's who we are. And unfortunately, even in a normal, everything's, you know, copacetic situation, we lose that relationship with our core. We never lose our core. I think that's something that people are misguided by. We never lose who we are. We never lose our identity. That's never gone. It's always there. What happens is we lose the connection to that identity. We lose the relationship to that identity. We lose the ability to pull from that. And that's because of all these different things. So when something traumatic happens to somebody like that, it creates even more barriers, more roadblocks, more, you know, brick walls, whatever analogy you want to come up with. And it's very difficult for somebody unguided to get back to that ability to communicate with your core. Again, it's always there. I always love this, and it's, you know, hot right now in the self-help world of, you know, find your purpose, find your passion. And it's in, and I just laugh at that because you're not, you know, it's not that it's some fictional thing that you can't find. It's inside of you. You just have to have that conversation with yourself. I mean, again, just my personal story is that I thought my passion and my existence was to be an entrepreneur and to make millions of dollars and wear $3,000 suits and have 9 cars and a house on the hill, which I had all of that and it was great and it was fun and it was fantastic, but that wasn't me. That never was. I thought it was. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, people would joke all the time with me that I was born in a suit. Mm-hmm. You know, literally, like, you know, you wouldn't see me not in a suit. Like, I remember going to a lake once and they invited me and I'm like, "Oh, what do you wear?" And they're like, "Shorts." I'm like, "I don't have shorts." You know, it's like so, but again, that's not me. You know, now I'm a down to earth mountain man. You know, I live up on the top of a mountain and I like to dress that way. I like to be comfortable. Suits are not very comfortable. Uh-huh. You know, so again, you're exactly right. You lose this connection with your core, your identity, but you don't lose your identity. It's there. You just have to find it. And then when you find that relationship with it, the assets and the skills and the techniques and the lessons, everything that you have learned can now be incorporated into that so that you can express your identity. And people say that that's finding your voice, right? It's like, oh, you found your voice. No, you figured out how to use your voice. It's never lost. It's never gone. And that's the key, is that so many people are searching for something that they think is lost, but in reality, what they need to do is learn how to create the skills to communicate with something that's always been there. That's the shift. That's where the power is found. And again, going to me at 16, that's when I started realizing that, wait a minute, all of these things that had happened to me, all these things that I had endured, all these stories that were mine, they were power. That was my power. That was my gift. That was my ability. And again, I didn't fully comprehend that until, you know, Saturday. So I don't know when this is going to air, but, you know, for me, in a couple of days, I'm getting on a plane and I'm heading to do a speaking tour in Texas. Mm-hmm. And one of the individuals that I will be speaking with has been raped 30 times. They're 17 years old. They've had one miscarriage and one abortion. 17 years old and been raped by 30 different people. Now, again, a good chunk of that is based on habits and based on the situations that they've put themselves in. Their sexual abuse started when they were 7 years old. And so you can just imagine, you know, the torture that they've lived through. But my ability to go into that situation really with a power that very few, and I'm not being cocky and I'm not meaning this in an egotistical way. It's just something that I've learned. Very few people have the ability to do that without coming out on the other end effed up. You know, I don't know what I can say on your program, but, you know, I don't know how many people can do that. And I get asked that over and over again. How are you able to sit with people and hear their stories, and not just hear their stories, but help them heal and have them see their power and see their abilities, and then go home and, you know, play Monopoly with your family? Like, how do you do that? And I don't know. I really don't have like an answer where I'm like, oh, well, here's the secret. It's just, it's part of my identity. It's what I am able to do, just as much as I was able to be a 6-year-old little boy and endure the torture that I went through. I'm able to take that identity and that power and now impact other people's lives. And so it's crucial that we understand our identity, but it's also not abnormal if we're sitting here saying, I don't know. I don't, where, you know, how do I communicate with it? Where is it? And like I said, the shift is it's right there. It's you that has to learn how to communicate with it.
Man, you're like full of poetic nuggets. This is going to be amazing. I can already tell our audience is going to love you. I want to talk about this idea of expressing your identity, which that really resonated with me, because I look at the expression of identity and I see it happen in so many different forms. And the question, I guess, for me is how you take the experiences of your life, your talents, your skills, and find whatever it is that is meant to be the expression of your identity.
Yeah, and that's a great question. And that's kind of that, like, finding your purpose, finding your passion question, right?
Just right.
Worded a little bit more.
I would say so. Yeah.
Effectively, yeah. And really, that comes down to, it's not here's the short answer. It's not difficult once you understand your core, once you understand your identity, once you have that relationship. So it's almost counterproductive for you to sit there and wonder how you're going to do it. Because once you have that relationship with yourself, it just comes, it just happens. You know, I mean, it's a lot like writers. You know, anyone who's a writer, or anyone who writes or anything, you know, the question always comes out, well, how did you come up with that? Or how did you write that? Or how did that, you know, come out of you? And it's like, I don't know. I knew what I was doing, and it came. You know, last night I wrote a piece called Red, the color, and I wrote it on top of a mountain, literally. It's an awesome photo that I was able to take, but I was on top of this mountain. It was 12 o'clock at night, or so 12 o'clock in the morning. And I wrote this piece, and I literally wrote it in 8 minutes. I don't know. It's 700 words, 800 words. And it's all about one of my experiences with suicide and kind of coming out of that and my rebirth. And I wrote it and just published it this morning. And, you know, it's already had a couple hundred shares, and I'm getting messages, and people say, how did you write that? How did you put that together? This is, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm not an amazing writer. It's not about that, but it just happened because I was in such, I am in such an amazing position of communication with my core and my identity that it just happens. And so thus finding my purpose or finding what drives me, it's not an obstacle. It's not an illusion. It's now so clear. I mean, obviously there's some marketing things and how do we get the message out just right and all those kinds of things. But for me personally, it's clear. I don't have any question about what I should be doing or if I'm doing the right thing because of that relationship. So don't worry so much about how are you going to do it, because again, it will present itself. And an authentic honesty, you know, vulnerable, raw, all those words that marketers like to ruin, you know, it's the reality. There's one thing that all of us can do perfectly without fail. None of us need training. Well, I guess we do need some training on us. That's the wrong thing. But none of us are less equipped than anyone else to do this one thing as human beings. And that is to be honest. The problem is that until we're honest with ourselves, we cannot be honest with the rest of the world. And that is the hardest thing. You know, I have an entire course that I teach adults called Superhuman Life. And I've redefined a lot of these words, you know, that people use on a daily basis, like the word honest and hope and understanding and all these different, you know, simplistic words that people just throw out there with their thinking. And honest is one of those. All of us have the ability to be incredibly honest, to be incredibly vulnerable, to be incredibly raw. And we're, you know, none of us have a, you know, upper hand against the other, except for the fact that we need to learn what those words actually mean and really, you know, drive ourselves into an entire concept of understanding and an entire concept of identity. You know, for me, the word honest means to accept the transparent reality of your core identity. You know, so this is what we're talking about, right? In order to have your passion, have your purpose, all that stuff, you have to accept the transparent reality of who you are. And that may not be the pretty little pictures that you're posting on Instagram. That may not be the status updates. But you've identified an unobstructed reality and have found clarity in your existence. You know why you're here. And there may be some dark shit. Can I swear on your program?
Yeah, go for
okay,
it.
Sorry. I mean, there may be some dark shit there. You know, there may be some things that you don't really like want the world to know, but guess what? They need to know that because that's who you are. You know, there's some darkness inside of me that's real. And it's not, you know, it's like the two wolves thing and all that other stuff. Like, I totally disagree with that. You feed both of them. Otherwise, you're not who you are. That doesn't mean that you don't have limitations because we're human beings that exist in a society. But to say that your darkness is evil or your darkness cannot be seen or your darkness is now you're just effing with your mind. You're just making yourself, you know, so weak because you're not understanding and having a unobstructed reality of who you are. So anyway,
wow. So actually this raises a question that I've probably brought up before. And it's about vulnerability and knowing where you have to draw sort of the line of going too far, because like you said, we have to exist in society. And it's interesting, right? Because when you and I are in the positions we're in, when many of the people are, you know, who are listening are in the positions they're in, our lives are incredibly publicly on display as creators and people who contribute to this whole ecosystem of madness on the internet. And having kind of been through, you know, what you have, I'm interested in hearing your perspective on where that fine line is that you can't cross, or where you should, you know, where that line is that should be contained to a therapist office.
Yeah. Do you have children?
No, I don't.
Okay. So the answer is always is easier when you do, but, anything that wouldn't, effect an infection, your children, in the sense that I have a son and a daughter, and you know, one of my missions, because of who my biological father is that one of my missions is to reclaim the Chapman name, you know, reclaim our last name, because I have a son, and I've never been proud. I love my father. You know, I've only met him a little bit, but he's my father, and I respect that. But the reality is that our name, the Chapman name, is not it's not a name that you know, say with pride. Usually it's a name that people laugh at. And so my goal is to create a new standard for what it means to be a Chapman. And so the vulnerability line goes to, is this going to infect my children when I'm gone? You know, is this going to be a disease for them, or is this going to be something that they can look at and say, my father did this and I am so proud of him? You know, I'm going to tear up a little bit because very few things get me to cry, but my kids do all the time. But, you know, I'm proud of him. And so in that vulnerability, there has to be the honest, there has to be the raw, there has to be the real, but there also has to be this concept of, you know, you don't have to put yourself into a position of shame or abuse or pain. Everything that I do, every article I write, every post I do, every interview I do, everything I do, yes, it's real, it's raw. I'll tell crazy stories. I'll get deep with people, very uncomfortable to read some of the things that I write. But at the end, my goal is to make you see that this is the reality, but this is the outcome that can happen. Mm-hmm. This is where you can go. And I think too many people are scared to do that because of political correctness or because of this or that or whatever. I got the best compliment from a school principal a couple of weeks ago after one of my presentations where he said, you know, his exact words were, I think the reason that Wes is able to connect so well with the students is because of his raw honestness. And then he stopped, and it's in the testimonial. He stopped for a second. He said, you know, no, he's just politically incorrect. And I was like, yes, you know, thank you. Like, I mean, and I don't mean that in an offensive way, but sometimes, you know, I was watching The West Wing, which is one of my favorite shows, and I think it was done in like 2002, whatever, I don't know, sometime long ago. And they were giving this speech about one of the judges that had died, one of the Supreme Court judges that was going to die. And Toby, one of the guys, was writing the speech real quickly. And the press secretary was like jotting it down. And he said, you know, he was a man that all men can be proud of, or something, some line like that. And she goes, no, you can't say that. And he goes, are you kidding me? She's like, no, I get letters. And he's like, okay, that all Homo sapiens can be proud of. And I was like, this was, you know, done 10 years ago, whatever. And it was such a problem. I mean, just think about the things we can and can't say because someone's going to be offended. And really what that means is that somebody has pain that they haven't healed. And so we're triggering that. And rather than them fixing their situation and becoming healed, we're all just going to be hypersensitive and not deal with anything. And that doesn't work, you know? And so I'm very blunt, I'm very bold. But like I said, that vulnerability line is that at the end of it, are my children going to be proud? Is this going to help, you know, heal the situation? You know, my tagline for SEO, which doesn't do me much good on my website, is it's time to, you know, it's time to heal, not hate. And that's the reality of it. And that's a powerful thing when you really think about it, because hate is a byproduct of offense. And look, I don't think the majority of human beings, I would go as far as saying like 90% of the 7.6 billion people on this planet are not trying to hurt other people by their words. They're simply just expressing their emotions and their feelings as best as they can. And we are handicapping so many people by throwing this stupidity of political correctness or offensiveness because we don't want to hurt somebody who's already been hurt. And what we should be talking about is, how are we going to help heal that person? And unfortunately, healing is a lot like stopping and taking 20, you know, stopping the 25 medications every day. There's going to be some withdrawals. It's going to be painful. You may be in the fetal position. But when you come out of it, if you've done it correctly, you don't have to deal with it anymore. You know, I don't deal with my flashbacks or pain or any of that stuff. I don't. I mean, it's there. It's real. Sometimes I'll tear up over some of the stories that I write or some of the things that I put out there. But I'm not captivated by it. I'm not holding myself to it every single moment of every single day. Unfortunately, you know, I just met a 55-year-old woman who's in a wheelchair, who hasn't been able to be herself, hasn't been able to communicate with her core, hasn't been able to do anything with her life since she was 13 years old. Well, magically something happened at 13 years old. She was raped. So from 13 to 50, she's continued to allow herself to be raped. And it's paralyzed her, literally. And I'm not a healer and I'm not talking about, you know, that kind of stuff, but I promise you when she's done with our course, she will start to mobilize herself. She, you know, I'm not going to say she'll walk again, but I won't be surprised if she does. If she, you know, not in a, I'm not being all spiritual on people, even though I believe in God, I'm saying that just the power of the mind, she's literally paralyzed her mind, which is left in a byproduct of paralyzing herself. There's so many studies done on how powerful our minds can be and back pains and shoulder pains and liver problems, all this stuff. Well, she herself has been trapped in her 13-year-old position for, you know, for almost 40 years now. And so, you know, the point is that you can have this raw, authentic realism. You can share your story. Just the caveat is that share with a purpose of healing, not a purpose of pain or not a purpose of like pity or shaming somebody or any of that stuff. And then, you know, just thinking about in when I'm gone and my daughter reads this or my grandchild reads this, is this going to be something that they are proud of? Or is this going to be something that they're like, wow, I wish he would have never said that or put that out there. I think that's a pretty clear way of just of establishing the line.
Wow. So let's talk about this in a bit more detail. You mentioned, you know, being abandoned by multiple groups of parents, you know, biological parents, foster parents. And I'm interested in how that impacted your identity and how that also impacted your sense of self-sufficiency. And of course, how we start to develop a sense of self-sufficiency without having to go through such horrible things.
Yeah. Great question. So, you know, I have a hero in my life, which was ended up being my biological grandmother. She was the individual that finally, at 8.5 years old, was started the battle of getting me in her custody. I was never adopted. I was always in a ward of the state, which was its own issues. At any moment in time, somebody could knock on the door and take me away, which happened a couple of times. But we were able to kind of stabilize it about when I was 13, 14 years old. So This whole, but I had a lot of different men in and out of my life. I never had a father, whether it would be church leaders, Boy Scout leaders, teachers, stepfathers, you know, whatever. I never had a stable father. My grandmother, when she took me in, was single, which actually was a whole nother battle that she had to fight because she wasn't a quote unquote in the 80s, you know, she wasn't a ideal candidate for fostering. And so there was a lot of different things. And I got some advice from an individual that said, you're going to have a lot of different men and a lot of different people that come into your life, and you need to see past their weaknesses and see their greatnesses. Take their weaknesses as their faults of man and take their greatness as their ability to change the world. And I kind of, you know, when you're young, you get something like that and you're like, what the heck? Like, who's this poetic weirdo? You know, it's like, what the heck's going on? And now that I look back at it, I'm like, wow, that was the best advice I ever got in my entire life. And this person didn't know me. That was really the beauty of this, is this person didn't know me from Adam. They were actually an individual. It was just like a scout leader kind of person. And I was just in their group for a couple of days when they told me this advice. And I look at my career, I look at, you know, everything, and I've been around some incredibly powerful people, you know, everybody from Bill Gates to, you know, the founder of Costco. You know, I've been around some really amazing people. You know, Gary Vaynerchuk is one of my good friends. I mean, Chris Tucker, like you talked about. I mean, I'm around a lot of a really powerful men and women as well. But this was a specific thing for, you know, targeting for me, because my identity was very lost in the sense of fatherhood and who was going to be my dad. And I was constantly seeking that. And I think this individual saw that. I was constantly looking for that father. We all want a, you know, a mom and a dad. That's just natural. It's human. It's a human right. And I was looking for that and I just, you know, couldn't find it. But this was so poetic and so powerful, because what happened was, in this journey of trying to find my father, which was also trying to find my, you know, that my communication with myself, is that I was constantly let down. I was constantly failed on. I was constantly ignored. You know, somebody that didn't even know that they were a father figure was a father figure to me. And then they would do something that was so simplistic, but to me was so horrific that it would paralyze me. You know, they would end a relationship. They would stop. I let this happen in business, where I got personal with my clients because I was, you know, somebody was paying me $500,000 to do something for them. And then I saw their lifestyle and who they were and their beautiful family. And I was like, oh my gosh, like you've trusted me with $500,000. So I'm like your son, you know, so this is awesome. And then I would come into their lives and that thing. And then the $500,000 contract would end and they'd be like, hey, thanks for the work. And I'd be like, but wait, I love you. And that sounds so like morbid and crazy, but that's how my mind was. It's like, no, you are, you're filling the role of my of being my father. And then they would disappoint me. Or I had other situations where I saw the realness of corporate America. And I would, you know, be in meetings of people who I thought were great men and great leaders, and they were manipulating or, you know, cheating on their wives with their secretaries or whatever else. I've seen a lot of different things in my existence. And how poetic was that, that we, I was to see past their flaws, their weaknesses of man, and see their greatness and take from that and put into myself. And so again, going back to what we talked about in the beginning, I'm able to take all these lessons. And then now that I have this amazing communication with my core and my identity, all those lessons now get transplanted on top of that, on top of who I am. And now I'm able to regurgitate things in my voice, in my way, in my with my understanding, with also this, this incredible arsenal of knowledge and intelligence. And I'm not holding on to the negativity. It's only the positivity that I'm holding to, which thus creates more positivity. Now, again, you've got to have some of that, you know, that that negative charge. But, you know, for the most part, it's positive and it's there. And so for somebody who hasn't been through something like that, it's still the same exact formula. If you haven't been through losing a father, or, you know, you're just trying to seek, stop with the negativity. Focus on the positives of people and who they are and their gifts. And if you need to get somebody out of your life because they're toxic, that's totally different. But don't look at that as a toxic situation. Look at it as if this is what I learned from this. You know, I have a crazy story of meeting the man who abused me right after this whole 16-year-old dropping the drugs and going through that whole process. I met in the sense of like, hey, how are you doing? But saw the individual that had molested me for 6 years of my life. I saw that individual and I was in a place and a position both of stature and every other possibility that I could have literally killed him. He was I think he finally got citizenship, but he wasn't quote unquote American at the time. He was, you know, working at a job that nobody knew he was working at, and he was being paid, you know, under the table kind of thing. And I was in an abandoned location. I could have killed him. I literally could have killed him. And the core essence of who I am has that, you know, may have that ability. And I remember being in that moment and thinking about where's the positivity in this situation, right? Where's the positivity in this man? And it was there, and I found it. And I was able to literally laugh at the situation and think that here I was in, you know, my moment of clarity. I was in my moment of power. And this person across the street, you know, in this field working, this person was still trapped in an alternate universe, if you would. He was still trapped in this non-reality of who he was. And it wasn't his fault. And that is so, like, people yell at me every time I say that. What do you mean it wasn't his fault? You know, and you hear some of the stories and things that he did to myself and my siblings, but it wasn't. And that clarity and that understanding, that's a different place. That's a different, you know, it's a hard place to get to. If any of you are listening to this and you've been abused, it's a difficult place to be in, but that's where the power is. I now have complete power over the situation. He's not molesting me anymore. He's not hurting me. He's not touching me. He's not doing anything to me. I'm able to live in this complete clarity and understanding, because I'm seeing the positive of the situation and I'm focusing on that. I'm focusing on, look what this has done for my life. Look what this is doing. You know, and again, I didn't have this perspective at 16, but I knew that it was changing my life. I felt different. But now fast forwarding to, you know, 34, look what it's been able to do to millions. You know, I have a dream of impacting 25 million people's lives. And when I said that 2 years ago, people thought I was crazy. And it's happening, you know, it's happening. Hundreds of thousands have been impacted. And I know that because I've gotten the messages. I've read the emails. I've seen the shares. I've got a podcast that has over, you know, 4 million downloads. Like, it's happening. People are being impacted by the message, which is, in reality, which is going to sound really morbid and crazy to the mass majority of this audience, it's because of that man. And that is so empowering that I know that I have the ability to overcome something as horrific as what happened to me. And you know, you can read some of the stories on my blog about it, but horrific situations. This isn't just like, you know, a little molestation, horrific situations. And, but because of him, I am who I am. And because of who I am, thousands are able to release themselves and become what I call superhuman. But, you know, they're able to become themselves and become the best you can be, right? They become the best them they can be. So I don't know. But I mean, for anybody, whether you've gone through trauma or not, the reality of the situation is start looking at the obstacles in your life and start looking at the problems in your life and start seeking the solutions and finding the positivity. Because when you do that, you create a different energy, a different aura, a different perspective, whatever you want to call it. But things change overnight. I mean, this is an instant thing. And the more you practice that and the more you – and start with little things. You know, you're in traffic, right? I mean, LA is 2 hours from me. And I went to LA last night and it's like, holy crap. You know, it's like – but what choice do you have? You going to honk your horn, flip somebody off, you know, get all pissed off? Or are you going to say, you know what, I'm in this opportunity – I can either make a phone call to a friend I haven't talked to. I can call my mom. I can listen to music. I can think. I can ponder. I can relax. I can slow down. There's nothing I can do, but where's the positivity? Start something as simple as that. And this isn't I'm not a big self-help guy. I think that whole industry is is a crock pot on a lot of it. But NLP and all that stuff is a powerful tool, and they're using it to make billions of dollars. But the point is that there is some simplicity in just, you know, the simple things of life. And one of the simple things of life is look at the positive. And if I can look at a positive of a situation from my childhood, then anyone can. And it's not a comparison of my childhood's harder than yours. In fact, if you study me, you'll know I have a whole thing called the Elmo effect, which is a whole long story. But I believe that every single trauma affects everyone equally, and there's no level of like, oh, you were molested 7 times. Well, I was molested 13 times, so my life sucks more than yours. That's garbage. You know, and even if you weren't, like, oh, you just didn't get your, that's why I call it the Elmo doll. You just didn't get your Elmo doll on your 8th birthday, you know? I mean, that can still hurt someone. There's still pain there. There's still trauma there. So we've all had trauma. Mm-hmm. Just start looking at the positivity of the situations. And then again, that communication with your core, and you start to have this symbiotic relationship where things just morph, things just change. And it becomes this, you know, this power statement where now you're in control, you're with power. And the whole process of that is that you have to be honest with yourself, so you can be honest with other people. Through honesty comes clarity. Through clarity comes power. You know, it's a process. It's not just like, oh, yep, okay, you know, here it is. It's a process, and it's a practice.
Man.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot.
we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
All right. Let's talk about your 12 suicide attempts. I want to talk about what it is that drives somebody to that level of darkness that they figure that it's not worth it to continue.
Yeah. You know, I just had Prince E, who's a good friend of mine. He's a spoken word artist on YouTube. Amazing, amazing man. He just posted for us one of the stats, right? Every 13 minutes a child commits suicide. And I don't know, it's gotten 2,000-3,000 shares so far and made our lives a little crazy at the organization because it went viral a little bit for us. And what was interesting was some of the comments. There was one particular commenter on there. If anyone goes and looks at his timeline, you'll know who I'm talking about, that just basically said, you know, everyone who commits suicide is weak. Everyone who commits suicide is horrible. Everyone who commits suicide is evil, and you know, we all have pain. He was like one of those trolls, you know, that just like comments on everyone's comments. And I wanted to, you know, find him, beat him, and take care of him in the backyard, but I won't do that. I'll just hire someone too. But anyway, the reality is that it got me thinking about, you know, just people's perspective. And unfortunately, anyone who is of faith and in a religion will hear that suicide is, you know, so evil and you're evil for even thinking about it. And I want to just say that probably means that 7.4 billion people on the planet, if there's 7.6, that 7.4 billion people on the planet are evil. Because if we all got honest with ourselves, there's a moment where we've thought, I'll just drive off the cliff, you know? And again, there's different levels of this, right? But you had the thought, so thus you must be evil. And that's how I combat that. And I've said that in churches, and it's actually quite interesting. It kind of goes back to the, you know, if any of you have not committed sin, you know, cast the first stone kind of thing. This is a reality that happens. You know, death seems to be an escape. Some people are terrified of death. Some people are excited for death. Some people, you know, welcome death. Some people don't understand death. But death is an escape. Whether we want to admit it or not, it's an escape from whatever reality that we live in. And if we're living in an amazing reality, it's a negative escape because we don't want it to end, you know. So, but if we're living in a reality that's horrific, if you're living in a situation where you're all alone, you feel like you're weird, you're crazy, you're inadequate, then you want to escape that reality, and death is an escape. Mm-hmm. So when you understand that simplicity of it, suicide makes sense. And that really sounds morbid, but it makes sense because it's like I'm living in this horrible situation. So it just makes sense for me to escape this situation. I mean, human beings do not, if it's too hot, we find a way to cool down. If it's too cold, we find a way to warm up. Like, we don't like being uncomfortable. It's not in our DNA. It's not how we were, it's not, if we're hungry, we seek food. You know, I mean, if we're horny, we seek sex. Like, mm-hmm. it's how human beings operate. So why is it that we can't say, that we can't understand that if you're miserable and you're in so much pain and turmoil, and you feel alone and you feel hopeless and you feel worthless and you feel all these things, why is it so irrational for somebody to say that the escape of death is uncomprehendable? It's very understood. So the reality of the situation is it comes down to helping an individual who's struggling with suicide or depression mm-hmm. understand that they have worth. And worth is a big topic. We could do an entire podcast on worth, because the world that we live in, every message, which some say our teens are getting about 19,000 of these a month, every message that is created by a organism or an organization that is trying to sell you something uses one particular technique. And it's the technique that triggers the hormones, the chemicals, the thought processes of telling us that we are not enough, that we do not have enough, that we're not in you know, the status of being enough. And I don't care what brand you look at. Coca-Cola, right? Enjoy life. Drink Coke. Subliminally means if you're not drinking Coke, you're not enjoying your life. You're not having enough fun. Alcohol, another big one, right? Mm-hmm. You can't party without drinking. You can't have enough fun unless you're drunk. Like, I'm sorry, I've drank a little bit, you know, drink two. I've been to a lot of parties where people get drunk, and then I ask them the next morning, how much fun did you have? I don't remember anything. Oh, fantastic. You know, so again, but we're sold that. So we're constantly sold that we're not enough. Now, my generation, we didn't have the internet like we do. We didn't have social media. We didn't have on-demand TV. We didn't have all these different messages. We didn't have programming. And we used to have commercials, mm-hmm. and you could either walk away from a commercial, watch a commercial, tune out a commercial, whatever. Now, television programming has figured out people don't watch commercials. So guess what most television programming is? It's a freaking commercial. And it's not even a commercial in the sense that people think it is. It's a psychological fuckfest is really what it is. Pardon my language, but it really is, because what they're doing to you is they're finding ways to make you feel inadequate and then implanting brands that are there to make you feel like, oh, that's the solution. So the feeling of worth is so powerful. It's so, you know, it really is the core of everything that we're talking about here. And the simplicity is that we've also gone away from the concept of building things mm-hmm. as a human. You know, think about it. I don't care how you think we got here, but when we landed here on Earth, the first thing we started doing was digging in the ground and planting seeds and watching it grow and then eating it and saying, well, that was cool. Let's do it again. And we had a sense of self-satisfaction. We had a sense of belonging. We had a sense of worth. And so in that worth, we created our self-esteem. Well, what are we building? What does the average person build? Nothing. We used to play with blocks when we were a kid and use our imaginations and build, you know, castles and lands and all. Now we don't have to use our imaginations. We can just jump in. And it doesn't surprise me that games like Minecraft are so popular mm-hmm. is because they force the brain to use imagination, whereas a game like World of Warcraft is actually, which is still popular, but popular for another reason, it's an alternate universe. It's an alternate reality. And so, you know, you have these things going on, but we're not playing with blocks and we're not in the dirt. And so worth is just becoming harder and harder and harder for us to find. But without worth, we feel hopeless. When we feel hopeless, we want an escape. When we want an escape, you look at suicide. So if you want to solve the problem, play in dirt and play with blocks. You know, I mean, really, it's really what it comes down to. But for people to say, I don't get why somebody would commit suicide, first and foremost, you do. Because if you're honest with yourself, you've had a thought, a moment, a idea, a joke, a concept where you've said, oh, it would just be easier if I wasn't here, or maybe I'll just die, or this is stupid, or whatever. You've had that momentary thought. Now, the difference is that if you were living in it and your brain was having some chemical issues where you're, you know, your wiring, it maybe not, isn't quite functioning correctly. Maybe you're, you know, the food that you're eating is messing with you. There could be 1,000 different reasons. You have some genetic things, you have some social things, you have some environmental things. There could be 1,000,000 different reasons. But if you've got just things aren't firing correctly, then guess what? Solution could be suicide. And the cure, the way for everyone to solve this problem is to help everyone in their circle, in their community, feel worth, feel like they're important, feel like they're loved, feel like they're enough. If you run onto somebody who's struggling and having a hard time, you don't need to know all the magic things to say. You don't need to be poetic. I'll tell you the secret. You need to put your arms around them and you need to say, you are enough. You are enough. That can change a person's course of life forever, forever. And it's no one needs to be poetic. You are enough. And a hug, done. You can save a life that simply. The problem is that you have to take the action and the energy to be in the place that you recognize when somebody is struggling. And you know what? I tell people that just drop that line to somebody in their Facebook every once in a while. You know, just randomly select someone in your Facebook and just shoot them a message that says, hey, Tim, haven't talked to you in a while. I just wanted to let you know that you're awesome and that, you know, I love having your friendship and I love everything that you're doing. I mean, just that kind of a message. You just don't know the impact of simplicity that you can have on somebody's life. Don't overcomplicate the human. The human is a very simple organism. We need to eat. We need to have sex. We need to sleep. And we need to feel like we're wanted. Those four things, we're pretty good. I mean, shelter, you know, but we can find shelter under a tree. I mean, the reality is that if we have those four things, then everything else kind of just falls into place. But we want to overcomplicate it because we're curious beings and we want to be like, oh, it can't be that easy.
Wow. A lot of things that I have to say about this. One is around sort of the stigma that we've carried around mental illness or depression, which I actually think has done us a huge disservice. You know, I come from a culture where it's extremely looked down upon. And it's really interesting to hear you say so many people have had, you know, really, really dark thoughts. And I, you know, for the first time in my life, dealt with a period of extreme depression where I couldn't sleep. You know, I remember a friend who was my business partner. He saw a picture of us on the beach and he said, you look emaciated in this picture. He said, go see your doctor. He said, yeah. I was waking up literally every night with heart palpitations. And, you know, the funny thing is I did everything I could to avoid making that trip to a doctor's office because of the stigma that would come with taking medications. I even sent my little sister, who was a doctor, a text saying, is this shit only for crazy people? Mm-hmm. And she said, there's plenty of highly functioning people, probably people you know, even people I work with, who are on medication.
Yeah.
It kind of blew my mind. I mean, I think that, you know, fortunately we're finally shifting to a place where it's okay, but I really, really appreciate the fact that you brought up this notion of worthiness because, God, I mean, think about like how the internet perpetuates your sense of lack of self-worth. Everybody mm-hmm. is always up to something far more epic than you are.
Exactly. And the reality is that there's no truth in that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the reality is that, you know, it's the I'm not sure on the age, I think it's 8 to 21 or whatever. The female takes 21 minutes to post a selfie on Instagram. 21 Jeez. Minutes. Are you kidding me?
Wow.
And there was a child in Seattle, a male who, nearly died. He attempted suicide. They were able to revive him and save his life. And then when they went through the treatment, started talking to him, like, why did you, you know, there was obviously a lot of different reasons, but why that day did you decide to, you know, take the action to kill yourself? And he had locked himself in his room for 8 or 10 hours trying to take the perfect selfie to share, and he couldn't get the perfect selfie. So he felt inadequate and he wanted to kill himself. It's real. And it's a two-sided, double-edged sword, whatever, in the sense that the stigma protected the reality of the human mind. And it served a point to some degree that, look, there are some people who definitely have mental illness, definitely have chemical defects in their brains that it's not their fault, you know, that could be from, you know, parents, situations, could be from the way the child was conceived, could be from a gazillion different things. It could just be the bad luck of the draw. I mean, there is that reality. There's also the reality that, you know, everyone suffers from a little bit of depression here or there in their lives. The thing that we have to be careful about is not going on the extremes of both sides. You know, the stigma of you're crazy and you should Right. be in a loony bin in a white, you know, jacket if you take any kind of antidepressant or you admit to anyone that you've thought about ending your life or that you, you know, have voices in your head. I remember when I was 7 years old and I was finding religion. I was born into a Catholic family and then, you know, religion was used against me in so many different ways. And then when I was kind of, after I was abandoned, I was a very old soul. You know, at 4 years old, I was actually a babysitter to my three younger siblings. So you can, that tells you how old they were. So I understood a lot of different things. So at 7 years old, I had this passion to understand God and understand religion and understand the whole effed up world of churches and, you know, all this stuff. And so I started researching and I started reading and I started reading all kinds of different books and the Bible and all this stuff. And I told one of my therapists, I said, you know, I was reading this thing and I wouldn't tell them what book I was reading because they were all, you know, most of them were atheists, which I later found out. But I just had a feeling like, don't tell them about, you know, what I'm reading. I just said, I'm reading this book that talks about having a spirit with you or having a voice with you. That's mm-hmm. what I said. And I think I can hear that voice. And I can, it's telling me to not be in these circumstances. It's telling me that I'm okay. It's telling me that I'm loved. It's telling me everything's okay. I told that to a counselor, and I have in my closet, I have all the files from when I was a kid in these hospitals, and they immediately put me into testing for schizophrenic behaviors and all these other labels because I had voices in my head. And so immediately I was classified as weird and psychotic and crazy. And the reality is that I was beginning to have a conversation with myself, with something greater. And these were positive things that were being said. So who cares if I have voices in my head? They're telling me I'm awesome. So I want those voices every day. You know, but the reality is that we go too far on that side. Then we go clear over here where everyone has depression, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a whole nother too far. Because now you are declassifying something that's very serious. Now you're taking away the power of somebody saying, I feel depressed. You know, saying I feel depressed should be very carefully used, and I'm not belittling anyone who does it, but the reality is that real depression, somebody who's suffering with depression, which sounds like you went through, where you literally can't get yourself out of bed, where you literally feel like everything you do is for no purpose. You feel your energy is sucked away from you. Your existence is futile. You know what I mean? Just everything that you're doing has no purpose, has no meaning. That's depression. It's dark. It's dreary. It's agonizing. It's horrible. You know, it's undescribable unless you've lived it. And then so for somebody who's like, oh, I just broke up with my boyfriend. I feel so depressed. And it's like, you know, look, you have similar chemical reactions because you've had a letdown. Mm-hmm. And maybe you could slip into depression. And I'm not belittling that you don't have these feelings. But the reality is that you're not depressed. You're sad. And that those are differences. And so we need to create this movement of saying it's okay to feel these feelings, but also being careful that we don't over exacerbate the situation so that people that have these conditions that are literally going through these feelings can't feel and share those. Because I'll tell you what happens is that I remember when I was younger and I was going through high school and a girl in my school talked about being raped. She'd been raped. She was a cheerleader and she was raped by a football player. And, you know, she got up and told this amazing story of being raped. And it was like, wow, that was powerful. And everyone like circled around her and they felt like, you know, everyone just loved her. And I was kind of sitting there being like, you know, maybe I can share my story. You know, those of you that went to high school with me have no idea my life I lived. In fact, a lot of them are my friends now and they're blown away. But anyway, the point is that what ended up happening is she wasn't really raped. What ended up happening is that she had sex and her dad found out and, you know, she had to make up this thing that she was raped. And no one found out about that till, you know, years later. But I remember sitting there, you know, thinking about it and then people around the school, so this happened in this one class, this one moment, everyone was loving her, but then people around the school started making fun of her and they started putting up posters, you know, for a good time, call this person. And they, you know, and it became a bullying thing and it became really bad. And I sat there and I thought, and I was like, oh my gosh, like she just had sex with one of the football players. If people know what happened to me, like, what are they going to do to me? Like, what are they going to say about me? What posters are going to be made up about, you know, Wes? Like, what's going to happen? I'm just going to keep my mouth shut because I don't want to go down that path. And so the reality is if we give too much attention to the wrong thing, we actually hurt the things that we're trying to give attention to, if that makes sense. So if we're saying that everyone suffers with depression, then those that really suffer with depression are going to say, well, then hell, that person is able to function and do a video and say these things and be this kind of a person. So what am I suffering with? You know, I must be morbidly depressed. I must be horrible. I must be this, you know, so we have to be very careful about this conversation. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that in the conversation, we need to be able to be politically incorrect. We need to be honest. We need to be raw so that we can have this. I mean, a great example of this is amazing. That's what's happening in the mental illness world. It's amazing. But a great example is what we've seen happen now in our lifetime over the last 20 years in the gay and lesbian community. And I mean no disrespect to them at all. And I believe wholeheartedly that they have a choice and they are deserving of those choices. But I work with youth on a daily basis who are living in kind of a worthless state of existence. That's how they feel. And I can tell you that last week alone, I had 4 youth come to me and tell me about their parents and what was going on. And these 4 youth were not being abused. They were being neglected, which is abuse, but they weren't being physically abused. They had a loving mom and dad, quote unquote. They seemed like a good little family, but they were suicidal. They were going through their problems. In fact, two youth are coming to my house tonight who I'm going to be working with on this similar type of case, good family, whatever. But these 4 youth came to me last week, all independent, all from different sides of the country. One was actually not even in the United States. And they all told me, you know what? I can't seem to get attention. Nobody seems to want to hear me. So I'm going to tell everyone I'm gay. And I was like, are you? Are you gay? No, but it's a way that I can get attention. And there's clubs and there's things that I can do. And there's ways that I can feel like I'm wanted if I tell people I'm gay. Hmm. Now, no one in the gay and lesbian community wants that. No one in the world wants that. The reality of the psychological emphasis that we're putting on that topic, however, in our world and how our children are receiving that is very interesting. And I did a whole podcast on, you know, Christians and gays don't hate the Christians and Christians don't hate the gays. We all need to get along. But the flamboyantness of the topic can actually create the opposite effect of what you're trying to say and what you're trying to do. You know, gay is not a choice, right? It's something that you're born with. That's the movement. That's what we're trying to say. Well, people are making the choice based on the feeling of worthlessness. Mental illness is not a choice. It's not something that you wake up and you're like, hey, you know what? I'm going to feel depressed today and I'm going to feel suicidal. That's my day. That's what I'm thinking. No, it's something that happens over time. But again, if we go to one extreme or the other, that's where we create the chaos. That's where we create the problems. So, I mean, again, I'm not saying things that are politically correct. People are not going to agree with me. That's okay. I'll be right whether I'm dead or not, because I know that this is going to happen to the human mind. It happens over and over again. We can look at history, and I'm not being cocky. It's just, we can't under appreciate, we can't under focus on it, but we can't also over, you know, we have to be in the real spot. We have to be in the reality. And it doesn't mean we have to devalue somebody who's broke up with their boyfriend and that they're feeling sad. They need love. They need attention. You know, one of the interviews I just did with founder of Bethel Church, which no religious thing, I was just curious on his organization. He said, you know, this whole concept of everyone saying, oh, you just want attention. You just want attention. He said, I loved his analogy. He said, that's like walking by somebody who's drowning in a pool, like a swimming pool, and saying, what, you just want air? Like, get over yourself. It's like, no, human beings need attention. We just talked about that. You know, it's one of the 4 needs. You need to feel wanted. You need to feel attention. It's not that you want attention. You need attention. So what's the worst thing as another human being that somebody's doing something like cutting, or somebody's doing something like saying they're going to commit suicide, or saying that they're sad because of, what's the worst thing that you can do and just be like, hey, you don't need to do that. It's okay. Like, seriously? Yeah, maybe you're going to feed into their want or into their over exuberated, you know, desire to have attention, but for some reason in their life, they're not getting it. So maybe if you give them a little bit, maybe that'll help them move forward. And what have you got to lose? Like if they become, you know, a little annoying or get a little too, you know, whatever, and they bake boundaries, block them. You know, at least you did something. I mean, there's no harm in giving somebody attention. There just isn't. With boundaries, you know, don't be stupid, like Patch Adams, you know, that whole story, she gave the attention in the wrong way and she ended up dying. You know, I tell that to my fiance all the time. Like you have to have boundaries. You need to be safe, you know, but a Facebook message, somebody's having a bad day, and don't publicly put it on their page. Message them and say, hey, I saw that you posted that thing that you hate your life. You know, I just wanted to let you know that you don't need to hate your life and you can be amazing. And if they write you back some crazy thing, you can be like, hey, I'm just here to help you. And I really want to stay positive in this. just, you know, and if they keep going, that's what the block button's for. But it doesn't hurt you. I mean, and I'm telling you, I've done this a gazillion times on Facebook, and I can tell you how many people are now great friends of mine, how many people are amazing allies of my stuff and things that I share. But more importantly, they are now in control of themselves, and they are becoming the best them they can be. And it's amazing. And all I said was, hey, you know, I saw you're having a bad day. I just wanted to let you know that I care. I just wanted to let you know that I really think you can turn this around. I believe in you. That's it. That's it. That's how simple it is. And it's real too. I'm not BSing just for, you know, likes on Facebook. Like it's really how I feel.
So two final questions and we'll get things wrapped up here because we're well over an hour, but you've just been kind of dishing so many poetic nuggets that I don't want to stop. One of the things that is really interesting to me is you get to this moment where you've got an 80% chance of death and a 20% chance of living. And that becomes a moment of a drastic identity shift. And I'm interested in how we create those kinds of drastic shifts in our lives.
You know, I think that there's a cycle, right? And if we look at history, any great civilization, I don't care what it is, has this same cycle. But it's the hero cycle. It's the same concept. Every storybook, every big story that we ever write, anything that comes out of Hollywood that has to do with this has this same cycle. And that cycle is that you're at some level of success. Okay, so let's just say birth. Right, birth is a success. You're here. You're on the planet. You made it. You know, for however you believe in that, you're here. So boom, first success. Pretty heroic. And then things start happening and, you know, maybe you get molested or maybe you get abused or maybe something happens to you or maybe nothing happens to you. Maybe life just happens to you and, you know, this or that or whatever. Things just start beating you down. Then you come to this moment, you know, it's this moment that all civilizations have, all heroes have, all stories have, and the reality is all unique individuals have this exact same opportunity. You come to this moment where you're basically, you know, as far as an analogy, you're laying on the floor and all you can do is look up, you know, and it's just like you're just laying there and you're paralyzed. And you're looking up at all the things you wish you could have or all the things you hope you could have or all the things that you desire to have, but they're just so unobtainable because you're lying there on your back. And every moment has this, you know, Unbroken, the movie, the book, you know, talks about this. You're there and the decision is, do you stand up and start fighting for those things that you want, hope, and desire? Or do you still lay there and keep looking at all the things that you hope, want, and desire? And that's really the simplicity of it. And when we read about the great heroes and we see the stories, they all make that decision. And then they make that decision in that lowest of points. And everyone has that moment. Everyone has that time. It could be a bankruptcy, a divorce. It could be a death. It could be a, you know, a near-death experience. It could be, there's so many different things. But every single human being has that. And I think it's intentional. It's part of the process. You know, again, we have a great success from the moment that we're born. So anything after that could be a letdown. I mean, goodness, you're in the womb and you're sitting there having a conversation with yourself. You're like, this is pretty cool. I'm just floating around in here. This is awesome. I'm getting all the food that I want. Everything's great. You know, and then you come out of the birth canal and you come into the world and you're like, what the hell is this place? You know, it's like you've achieved something, but at the same time, it's like, wait, is this what I wanted? Let me back in, you know? And I think that That's in design, that it's like, look, you're having this time with yourself, you're coming into this world with other people, then these other people may, you know, infect and affect you as you go along in this world. And then you get to this moment where you're on your back and you're looking up and you're saying, what do I do? And there's nobody else that can do anything for you. And I think that that's the illusion that people have, is that someone else is going to perpetuate you to success. And that our society is such a society of victimness. It drives me nuts. Like the bullying campaigns are all about the victim. Stop it. Stop talking about the victim, because all we do is we amplify victimness. And there's nothing that, yes, there's victims. Yes, there's people that have been through things. But us amplifying their victim mentality is not going to help them. It's not serving them in any way, shape, or form. And so as you're lying on your back, it's up to you. You must make the decision. Am I going to lie here and keep dreaming, or am I going to stand up and start taking action? And when you stand up, you've already succeeded. When you stand up, you've already been successful. When you stand up, you're already the hero. Whatever happens to you next is part of the journey of being a hero. You are now classified as a hero. The second you stand up, you are a hero. And there is so much power in that. Now, all of a sudden, when you have to make the decision, do you let the school bus fall or do you save your girlfriend? Analogy to Spider-Man. Like, what do you do here, right? And it's like, I'm a hero. So guess what? I'm going to save both of you. I'm going to save both because I can do it. There's power in that. There's power in just the concept that you can do that. So the second you stand up, you've already become a hero. So now everything else is easy. You know, the hard part's over. You've stood up. It doesn't mean that you're not going to have to make those hard decisions. It doesn't mean that, but guess what? You can achieve. You can make it happen. And even if you quote unquote fail and it doesn't work out exactly how you wanted, guess what? The worth is in the journey. The worth is in standing up. The worth is in the exploration. The worth isn't necessarily in the outcome. It's just not. And that is a different clarity. So to everyone who is sitting there saying, how the hell do I make a shift in my life? How the hell do I change things? Look at yourself. Get off the frickin' floor, stand up, and start taking action.
Hmm. Wow. I have one other question, and then we'll wrap things up. And this is about sort of this dichotomy of reality and fiction that you are living in, where you're this guy who wears a suit. What's funny, because I had a Barney Stinson moment. You started thinking about your mother when you mentioned that.
Barney, he actually used to be like, people would compare me to him. Him and Catch Me If You Can guy. So
that's hilarious.
Frank Abagnale.
You know, wrestling with that dichotomy of this high-powered guy who shows up in a suit, who's working with all these corporations, and at the same time going home and being a person who is suicidally depressed. And how you deal with that.
I didn't. I mean, that's the reality is that's an impossible thing to deal with because you're lying, right? And you're lying to the core, going back to the definition of honesty, to accept the transparent reality of your core identity. I wasn't accepting the transparency of my identity. I was trying to create an identity that I thought would be accepted by the rest of the world, but in reality, you know, I was fake. And so I wasn't succeeding. I was doing the exact opposite. I was completely dissolving myself of any existence that I had the opportunity to have. And the moment in which I understood that it was okay, you know, in the moment that I understood that I could be me is the moment that I was truly free, you know, and the piece that I just wrote, that's exactly what I'm talking about. I tell this whole story of committing suicide and saying that I just wanted to die that day. Well, in reality, I did die because that part of my life, that part of my existence, that part of this fakeness that I was trying to create died. And so I did this fun little thing where I took one of my $3,000 suits and I burnt it. Literally, I created a video and I burnt it in my backyard and put it on video. And then I actually ended up catching my house on fire. So it's kind of funny. But I saved my house. But anyway, it was funny. So, but my suit goes up in flames, and it was this empowering moment where I was saying, look, nothing against suits. I still have a bunch of them. I still like wearing them occasionally. I look hot in suits, so it's good. But you know, the fact is that it was freeing for me to stop playing the game of being those two different people. And in that freedom actually came a lot of healing. In that freedom came even more of a conversation with my core. In that healing came more of a true purpose of my existence. You know, it was so liberating that it was amazing. But to answer your question is that it's impossible. You cannot play, you know, the two-sided card. It just doesn't work. And so many people, unfortunately, try to do that, and life will catch up to you. I was lucky enough. I was lucky enough that in my daughter was instrumental in the, you know, 16, I had this big shift and started working through it. My daughter, when I was 25 when she was born, and she was instrumental. Her coming onto this planet, told you I cry when about my kids, but her coming onto this planet was instrumental in me starting to be okay with who I was. Because the simplicity of her rolling over, of her crawling, of her putting her hands behind her head when she slept, the way she winked her eyes, the way she, you know, the way that she ate her food, there were similarities to me. And that was a freeing moment for me to be like, if I can love her because she's herself, which is has some aspects like me, then maybe I can be loved for being me. And that was a shift in my mind, and I started exploring that conversation. And then, you know, 3 or 4 years later, I burnt a suit. So it enabled me to release that, enabled me to be okay with that. But you can't play both sides. It's impossible. Life will catch up to you. I was lucky enough it happened young. I work with people on a daily basis who are in their 50s, 60s, and they're running. And now life is catching up to them. And they have so many, you know, pieces that they have to pick up, and so many things that they have to change, and so many things that, so much collateral damage that didn't need to be there if somebody would have just said, it's okay to be you. And that is so liberating, and that is so powerful. And so to anyone who's out there who's trying to play these two worlds, just stop it. Just be yourself. The world does not dictate who you need to be. And don't go extreme. You know, yourself may be that you need, you know, seven-inch gauges in your ears. I don't know. But the reality is it's probably not. The reality is you're probably doing things like that because you want attention that you're not getting. And that's kind of, you know, crazy behavior that people are going to give you attention for. Girls, put some clothes on. You know, I'm sorry daddy didn't give you a hug. I'm sorry daddy didn't love you, but you don't need to sell your body for attention. You know, these things, and if you're a surfer and you need to wear a bikini, that's perfectly fine. That's awesome. I'm not saying that, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But if you're walking around at the mall with booty shorts on that shows your butt because you don't feel loved, stop. If you're walking around with booty shorts because you have a good butt and you want everyone to see it, that's a different story. But I'm just saying, like, you know, be honest with yourself. You know, these conversations happen with you, not me. They happen with you. So be honest with yourself. Why are you doing the things you're doing? And if you're doing them for attention, if you're doing them because you feel worthless, if you're doing them because you don't feel like you're being yourself and no one's listening to you, then stop it. Stop it immediately and start being who you are and seek someone who will give you the love and attention you need. Find a community. That's my entire mission in life, is to build a community of empowered human beings. Find a community that will love you and support you for being who you are. And stop playing the games of the double-sided card.
So I want to finish with one last question, which is how we finish everything here. Yeah, the unmistakable creative. What do you think it is that makes somebody or something unmistakable?
Having a complete and total conversation with that core. I've always said, and you know, it's not a socialistic thing, it's a humanistic thing, is that we are not individuals. We are all unique, but we're a community. We really are. We're a community that relies on each other. We're a community that needs each other. We're a community of people that cannot survive without the concept of other people. Individuality is something to be celebrated, but not in the way that we've used it in our current language. Uniqueness is where it is. And so to be unmistakable is to really have that conversation with your unique identity, with your core, so that you can share that with the world. Because if you don't know, if you can't communicate well with that, how are you going to regurgitate it with the rest of the world? You're not. And that's why seeking and understanding and hypnosis and NLP and self-help and this and that and passion finding and all this crap is so successful, is because people don't want to have this real dark conversation with themselves in order to empower themselves to have this clarity, to have this unmistakable characteristics, to be unique, and to be able to regurgitate that to the world. You know, I mean, it's so, so important for people to understand that they have to choose insight over ultimate insanity. You know, unleashing your core and your power to the world cannot happen until you have chosen to have the insight of who you are, rather than living in the insanity and the chaos of the world that people want you to believe in. And that gives you the ability to heal the wounds and the scars and the pains in your life. And when you have healing, you have the ultimate control and understanding of your journey. You're no longer held by worthlessness, fear, hate, or remorse. You're living in a world of complete and total clarity, control, and power. And in that, you can become unmistakably remarkable.
Damn. You got me at a loss for words. That doesn't happen too often. Wes, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us to share your story, your journey, and your insights with so much rawness with our listeners here at The Unmistakable Creative. This has been mind-blowingly interesting and inspiring, and I think it's going to help a lot of people.
I hope so. And you can head over to superhuman.life, and I have a whole video course. It's all free. I may be redoing it because I did it a while ago, but it's there. It'll give you some glimpse into some of this stuff. And then if you're interested in finding more about the movement and the nonprofit and the Kickstarter thing, you know, that you mentioned too, it's a human project. So A is an apple, ahumanproject.com. And we'd love any support we can get on, you know, carrying out this mission to help our youth not be suicidal and live a life of joy and happiness.
Awesome. And for everybody listening, we will wrap the show with that.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Unmistakable Creative Podcast. While you were listening, were there any moments you found fascinating, inspiring, instructive, maybe even heartwarming? Can you think of anyone, a friend or a family member who would appreciate this moment? If so, take a second and share today's episode with that one person, because good ideas and messages are meant to be shared.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here, like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The Four Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, K-E-Y-S. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.